And we are back. And I will start this with a poem I recently read. And it goes like this. Here we go again, thinking that walking upright, opposing our thumbs, posing our big heads and long limbs, standing erect above it all, talking and reasoning all our reasons, removes us from raw truths. Now, that poem was written by Mark Thomas. It's called Fancy Apes. And Mark Thomas has just released a new collection of poems called Wetlands, Low Country Haiku, where he brings us into touch with some of the beauty and splendor of those raw truths he talked about in that poem. And also joining us is Jose Rey, who I think many of you know. Jose has been around doing some pretty elegant work in Savannah for a number of years now. And Jose illustrated the volume for Mark. So, gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you. Good to be here as well.
Okay. Real fine. Mark, the new book, Wetlands, Low Country Haiku, kind of combines several interests and does them in a rather unique way. How did that all occur to you?
Bit by bit. It was an evolutionary process. I go to a number of open mic poetry readings, and in one of them I met Beau Frail, who is a local artist and poet, and I learned that he regularly sells his art and poetry in Forsyth Park, and I wondered, how do I get to do that too? Well, it turns out that he's an artist and a poet, so you're supposed to perform your craft for the public while you're there.
Okay.
In order to get a nice, cheap artist's license.
All right.
So I figured out, well, what can I do? And I was trying to figure out, well, I write poetry, you know.
By a thesaurus.
I'm not going to try to write sonnets for hire. I don't rhyme that quickly and easily, but I can write haiku easily, and I can teach haiku. So I said, well, I'll call it Haiku in the Park. And I went to the city and said, here's what I want to do. And they said, okay, you're an artist. And they gave me a license to go do it in the park.
Okay.
And I started to do it. And then it's Forsyth Park. So, yeah, there's mobs of people, but there's lots of nature, too. And so there's birds and squirrels. And that calls to mind all the other time I spend looking at things in nature, which I do regularly. And I started to write haiku both from memory and from what I saw. And I thought, I ought to try to turn this into a book. And then I thought, well, poetry's a hard sell, but there's all these people and tourists and everything with money. What would they like? So I thought they'd like something Savannah, something wetlands, something about the country here, but also about the park. So it sort of grew piece by piece. I started to take some of my nature haiku, which I'd been writing forever and ever, and brought them in with a set of haiku I wrote about how to write haiku.
Ah, yes.
And
if you're completely unfamiliar with haiku, Mark has at least two poems in there to introduce you to the whole concept.
Yeah, they're a little repetitive, but they're in different places. And so I looked at the repetition, and I thought, no, that's okay. Because some people read books from the beginning, and some people read poetry books from the middle. They just open it somewhere. And I wanted it to be a little bit of that in the Haiku in the Park section, as well as in the introduction.
Yeah, and I think succeeded beautifully. Haiku is it works in a very restrained structure. you only have a certain amount of syllables per line. You only have a certain amount of lines.
Right.
And so the thought that you put into the haiku has to be, well, there only has to be one or two thoughts. There can't be very many thoughts in there at all. And so each piece turns out to be a gem or a pearl on its own. Now, what you have done in a number of cases in your book is you have made some of those pearls kind of sequential, so there's a string of them there.
How nice of you to
each
say that.
each verse is a pearl, a haiku on its own, and yet connected to the one next to it. And I thought that was just a fascinating concept.
I did not invent that. I got that from Richard Wilbur.
Aha.
A great American poet.
Yes, and yes.
He very much turned to haiku, and some of his late haiku do much more structured things than I can do with a series of linked haiku with all the last lines rhyming and things like that. He's a much better technician than I am.
Well, poetry is not exactly in my wheelhouse. It's close, but not quite in. And that's the first time I run into it, and I thought it was admirable. Now, speaking of admirable, I have been to your house, and I have noticed that it was very elegantly painted. It is the brightest house, if you've ever been in Mark's neighborhood, you will ever see, or even if you haven't been in Mark's neighborhood. And that is partially Mark as the perpetrator of the thing, but the man behind all that gorgeousness is also sitting in the studio with us, and that would be Jose Rey. Jose, I have seen any number of things. You did a couple of exhibitions at the Kessler, did you not?
Yes, yeah, I had a few there, and I think the last one in town was right before COVID. It was like just in under the wire, yeah.
And you've also done a number of murals, wall paintings, as well as Mark's house.
Yeah.
You seem to specialize in waves of color. and is that kind of where you're coming from? I mean,
yeah.
A lot of the things I've seen from you are natural things. They're birds, they're plants, they're small animals, that sort of thing. All brightly colored and with combinations of colors that I wouldn't necessarily think would go together because I'm not very oriented, but they do. They're quite beautiful.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I think it's kind of the way I like to see the world, and I think if we slow down a little bit, like Mark's doing here with the book, getting us to try to slow down, appreciate things, and give it a little more thought. I really do think that each individual is going to pick out and pull more quote-unquote color from the world. And so as an artist, I'm just trying to do that, to be like, you know, if you sit down on this bench and just sit here for 10, 15 minutes, you're going to start to see these things too, the way the light strikes the leaves, and you're going to notice that little bird up in the treetop, you're going to start to hear the sound. And so what I'm trying, and people are like, oh, that's so interesting that you portrayed it that way, but really, I'm like, that's the way I see it, just because I'm taking the time to appreciate it and slow down and see it, which is what's great about working with Mark on this book, that I think we both have a similar approach, dare I say, about, you know, slowing down and appreciating the life that's swirling around us all the time, just in different art forms.
Yeah.
And it was great. You mentioned the mural at their house, and yeah, it was a great connection. I got to see how deeply steeped in the literary world you are from all the free little libraries that y'all maintain, and just your house is a library in itself. I got so many books from you and Margot. I greatly appreciated more inspiration art books. So yeah, it was a great working environment to be in, and now to continue that relationship has been really incredible.
Yeah, I think that's great. Just a question from out of left field.
Yeah.
when you're not painting, you also DJ a bit.
That's correct. Yeah.
And is there a connection between your thought process for music and your thought process for art?
I have made a lot of connections between the two. Overall, I think it comes down to design. Yeah, so just looking at the world through that lens, or hearing the world through that speaker.
Right.
As haikus do, you know, it's a structure, it's a form, it's composition. So I'm often kind of saying, what's the alternative, or what's the parallel to this music, or like DJ mixing? What's that look like in paint, or vice versa? And I'm glad that you touched on Mark, like, okay, I have all this stuff out here, and now how can I connect with my audience better? Like, you know, bringing in some of the Savannah elements, what right. tourists are looking for. And I've definitely learned how to do that through DJing. And when I did that through DJing, that kind of was like, okay, well, I can approach my art a little bit like this. Like, what do they want to see? Do that. And then it's like, okay, I've got them over here now. How much can I get away with? Like, can I sell my weird haikus as well? Like, yeah, so it's always just fun. Yeah, like, you know, you're always trying to do that with your audience. Like, get them in there, of course. You want them engaged. But then you're like, yeah. Okay, what can I get away with? Do you like this? Do you like that? What if I make it this color or try different compositions? Yeah, just always
kind of
look around.
If you were DJing, a rough parallel might be reading your audience and picking some music to...
For sure.
To fit it.
Yeah. What I like to do, I think the best way to explain what you're doing is you're trying to, like, lure, or kind of, like, you know, set the trap with a song that they know.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, yeah, I love that song. They come out, and if you mix it or blend it perfectly, then all of a sudden the next song is playing, but they haven't stopped dancing. They don't realize.
Right.
They're
right.
Like, oh, well, I'm already at her dancing. This song seems okay. I'll go ahead and keep dancing.
Keep dancing.
But if you just
okay.
played it from the get-go, from a dead start, they would probably not come out. So you're always just trying to, like, yeah, weave that path.
Well, let's go back to Mark. Mark, you and I share an admiration for the natural world. And you and I both spent a fair number of years in the Middle Atlantic states where... in places that the natural world wasn't as available to us. And here in Savannah it is.
Yeah, I was trapped in the Metroplex.
Yes. Mark was in the Metroplex North. I was in the Metroplex South. But you now make frequent expeditions out into the less populated places of the Savannah area.
It takes only a few minutes, you know. I live a few blocks from a marsh. I could walk to a park where you could watch the sunset coming over the marsh, you know. It's a little unlabeled park, but it's still available to me. And we just, my wife and I go out regularly. At least every Sunday, but also several times during the week. And we look for birds. We found a couple places where we can watch alligators pretty easily. Much closer to town than most people would like.
Well, I live out in the Delta, and I know exactly what you're talking about.
And,
the Oatland Island Animal Farm... has some resident alligators, but it has several more outside the fence in the marsh right by the animal preserve.
Yeah, we actually have a wildlife camera in our yard from time to time, and we don't keep it there all the time because where we live, the yard is too active. It takes 1,000 pictures a night.
Right, right.
But so we will put it up for a few nights every now and then, and we will catch, of course, feral cats, because there are feral cats all over Savannah, but also raccoons, possums, armadillos, the occasional coyote. Yeah. And we have a resident turtle in our yard. We don't often find it, but we know that it's nearby somewhere. So
we had, for a few years, we had a frog like that, but we found evidence that he is no longer there. So that was some time ago. I talked about this on the show before, but last year we had a hawk nest in our front yard, so we had hawklings hopping around the place for the better part of the summer. It's all fascinating. Nice. Very weird for me because I was in the southern part of that metroplex you're talking about, where a deer is considered a remarkable thing.
Yeah.
The combination of haiku and nature gives you an awful lot to look at. Of course, nature is a frequent subject in Japanese haiku as well.
Right.
I don't know why, but I felt that your volume was pretty focused. It talked about things that I recognize as being almost uniquely Savannah. Is that something you're aiming for?
Yes, absolutely. You know, white-tailed deer are not uniquely Savannah.
No.
So they aren't really in there.
No.
Although you can find them easily.
Oh, yes.
I wanted to focus on the things that I have enjoyed particularly because they were new to me. I'd never seen an armadillo before we'd moved down here. Well, maybe in a zoo, maybe not. I don't remember. But they're fascinating to watch. I like the way they trot along almost on their tiptoes.
They are. The last one I ran into was at Fort Pulaski, and I didn't discover him. My dog did, and my dog is not at all aggressive, but he trotted up and sniffed at it, and the armadillo kind of looked at him like he was being a nuisance and kept on doing whatever it was doing, and got the dog away. But yeah, they are interesting creatures.
Yeah. And Justin, I never get tired of watching an egret or a heron fly across the marsh any time of day, but particularly at sunrise or sunset.
True.
Yeah. And that's almost a cliche in local art and calendars and things like that, but I don't care. I'll go watch it again any number of times.
Yeah, I will too. Over where we are, I'm not even sure I should call it a marsh. It's more a mud flat, but it seems to be a rookery for egrets. And watching the small ones fly in and out, pretty inspiring. Well,
maybe you can answer me.
Sure.
How is a bird that hunts in mud always so pristine white?
Long legs. If any of that mud ever got on the body, it would probably not be good for it. So I think evolution has taught it to keep the feathers out of the muck, I think. Well, anyway, we have some announcements to make. So we are going to terminate this portion, and we will be right back. And we are back. Mark, let's cover some of your other activities, okay? For example, I noticed that Wetlands is being published by Ruminating Poet Press. Do you know anything about that?
Sure.
great
you're just dangling in front of me. Ruminating Poet Press is my creation. I am sole proprietor and sole author until I learn enough about it to maybe offer to publish another author. I've been learning self-publishing. My first couple books were published by a local independent press. And I got interested in that whole process. And so I've been learning about it and decided to go out on my own.
I think it's admirable you decided to do that, because the publishing business is something you will learn mainly by barking your shins on it. And well, good for you. And the second thing is, I have heard a rumor that once you get this book properly launched, which will happen in the next week or so, then there's another volume right on the horizon.
Well, yeah, it's a little more crunched than that. The book launch for Wetland Slow Country Haiku is next Thursday evening. July 31st, we're going to have it in the event space at the old Kennedy Pharmacy from the Davenport House Museum.
Right.
Yeah.
And incidentally, there is RSVPs and invitations are not a part of this. If you would like to come and be part of this, please feel free.
Right. It'll be from 6:30 to 7:30. But to my surprise, the book that was going to be coming out in August, I already got back from the printer.
Ah.
See, Wetlands was a conscious book. It was a planned book. It evolved in some steps, but I spent some months working on it. But the next book was a fast and short book. It's called Poems of Resistance, and it's already back from the printer. And it's only, not all that many pages long, and the whole last section is about knowing your rights in case you get trouble resisting.
I love that.
But just the current political situation got me thinking about, what can I do? What should I be doing? What is this poetry stuff for? What can I do with poetry? So,
well, another quote I read by the person I quoted before says, we tell ourselves stories that are just plain wrong and have great commitments to them, often for innocent and even pure reasons, but they don't help us, really.
Yeah.
And when we see something like that going on, resistance is a way to fight against that general impulse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So resistance is coming out, and you still have several years worth of notebooks to mine through for several volumes. And do you have anything else?
I still have a plan to. My first book that I put out was called Surviving Fragments, and that was all built out of poems that I'd written over a long time, since I got out of high school. And I graduated from high school 60-some years ago. And during the pandemic, my wife said, your kids are going to throw them away if you die during this pandemic. So, none of them were on the computer. I had to type them all. I had to clean up some of them, and it's called Surviving Fragments because I didn't always have a whole poem. Sometimes I only had part of something I'd written once. And I still have more stuff in that box. And some of it's never going to see the light of day.
But some of it perhaps will.
Some of it perhaps. One of them that did not see the light of day because I couldn't find it, I have since found.
Yay. Okay. So we have a new volume coming up too. And then there's the whole, When you deal with art or music or literature, there's the whole business of getting the piece done. And then there's the whole business of getting it out to the public, which is, less interesting, let's put it that way. And you have been doing some things along those lines, too. You have been part of a number of poetry readings. I don't know if you call them poetry slams exactly.
No, they're not poetry slams. Slams are something else. They're a kind of performance poetry that it's almost like hip-hop or rap without the music in some ways. And whereas what I do are open mics, which are poetry readings, which are open to anybody who comes and signs up to have 5 or 10 minutes, whatever the local rules are, to read their poetry, and then it goes on to the next person. And I like the open mics because I get to try out how a new poem sounds, how people react to it. I get to hear other people. They give me ideas. I get to talk about poetry with people, which is hard to do a lot of places. Not everybody wants to talk to me about poetry, but if you go to a poetry open mic, everybody wants to talk to you about poetry.
Okay, good.
And they tend to be held in bars and coffee shops, so that's good too.
That helps.
Yeah. My favorite one is every Monday night at the Water Witch Tiki Bar.
Where is the Water Witch, Mark?
It's at 2200 Bull Street.
2200.
Yeah. It's really pretty close to being across the street from the wormhole. A lot of people know where the wormhole is.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. When you are not doing those things, you're a pretty active participant at the Learning Center.
Yes.
And I have also heard that there will be a poetry reading session at the Learning Center in August.
Oh, yeah. I didn't come prepared for that. I can't tell you the date or time. But it's in August.
It's in August. Okay.
Right. This is...
The best thing to do would be to bring up the Learning Center website, and they will have that on their schedule.
Yeah. You can find their summer catalog.
Yes.
On their website. And it's listed in the catalog, although the poetry event is a no-fee event. Most of what's in the catalog are courses for which there are fees. But some of the events on it are open to people who are not Learning Center members and have no entrance fee. And I think the poetry event is one of those. And this poetry event is focused on history, and American history in particular. And we're finding people to offer to read poetry that they've written or that they just like. It doesn't have to be something they've written. And read it there. And there's going to be something coming out from me and Roger Smith and Lee Rich at the Learning Center shortly, but I don't know what it is yet because... It's not soup yet.
It's not soup yet. Exactly. Exactly. Jose, I'm not as in touch with what you're up to as I am with what Mark is up to. What have you got going on lately?
Well, Mark has inspired me to start writing poetry as well. So
really?
I've been showing up to Water Witch. Not as regular as this guy, but you know, I drop through every once in a while.
Yeah.
It's nice. I used to be just absolutely like mortified of like writing anything because I keep sketchbooks, you know, drawing all the time. But the thought of like putting my naked thoughts in there was just like too scary. But I just started having ideas, and some of those ideas just got a little more flowy and poetic. And at some point I started to look back at more recent sketchbooks and was like, oh, I think I like have little scraps, fragments of poetry and you know, that connection with Mark and the Water Witch Poetry Night. I was like, I'm going to go down there and try it out, see how it goes. And it was fun. So I've kept up the practice now. I'm committing to it a little more. It was kind of just like grew organically out of there. And yeah, I'm putting a little more focus on it now.
And just some other things is like, you know, in addition to open mics, some of the artists host a local drink and draws.
Yes, I've seen a couple of those.
Yeah. And sometimes there's a drink and draw at the Lone Wolf Lounge at the same evening as there's an open mic at the Water Witch. So creatives sometimes overlap. So well, we have a tendency for some of the folks to go to the open mic and then go to the drink and draw. Mm-hmm.
Not uniquely Savannah, other places. But isn't it wonderful to have overlapping events for stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean the Monday nights are like busy for me now. Like I can jump here, jump there, do this. It's a nice.
Do you have any upcoming exhibits of your art or something you're working on?
Right around the corner. For the rest of the summer, I'm focusing on doing some like smaller kind of residential kind of backyard murals. I completed some really large murals a little earlier in the year. And now like I'm trying to, these smaller ones that I keep pushing back down the list for the bigger ones. I'm like, okay, I'm getting to you by the end of summer. So try getting those lined up and just my, I have residencies DJing at Hotel Bardo on Fridays and Starling Yard on Saturdays. So I'll be jumping over there right after this, actually. It's their anniversary. I should know how many years, but I don't. they've been holding it down for a little while, and I love you, Starling Yard.
Well, that's great. So you have multiple occasions to collide with both Mark and Jose.
Yeah.
It's remarkable, I think, the width and breadth of the things that you two guys do together, starting, of course, with the house and then with this volume. Do you have any joint ventures planned or not nailed down, but perhaps anything you're talking about?
Not yet.
I mean, I'm working on an illustration, a portrait of Mark right now. That's actually what I was doing at the house before I came over here. So there'll be how many artists is it? Four?
Four.
Yeah.
At the book launch, we're going to have shameless self-promotion. You know?
I get it.
Four
that's well, isn't that what book launches are about?
Right.
Painters or drawers or whatever, and one by a photographer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jose's doing one. Thomas Ryder has done a lovely pastel of me. Jane Corr did a great portrait of me at doing an open mic. And a friend of mine from the Waterwitch Tiki Bar, who is a poet and a photographer, as well as having a full-time job as a construction supervisor, Anthony Torriello, who did the author's photo for the book Wetlands. And by the way, I ought to mention here that I mentioned Anthony, who took the author's photo there. Jose did the illustrations, but I also ought to mention that the cover photo was done by the other identity of P.T. Bridgeport, our host for the
year. That clown?
Yeah. So this was really, all sorts of friends of mine contributed to this book, and it was printed in Georgia.
Right,
so I like that.
Yes, that is good. And the vagaries of the self-publishing world have kind of squeezed everything into maybe only one or two different large entities that do that sort of thing. And if we can find more local entities and smaller entities that can do what we want, that's all to the good.
The part of there is scaling your ambition. If you want to be famous worldwide, yeah, you've got to sell your book on Amazon. But if you want to just deal with a local market, 90% of the books that I've sold, I sold in person.
Right. Yeah. Right. There is such a thing as a local market. And you and I are both familiar with Helen Bradley, who has written a novel and done a fantastic job with local marketing.
Yes.
And anybody who's interested in that might want to talk to Helen.
Well, and for example here, Wetlands is already in 4 stores in the area, and I'm going to get it in more. And I started out with a list that I made by taking Helen to lunch.
Aha!
And then I went to those places and said to people variously, oh, I'm a friend of Helen Bradley or Ed Extrans or somebody like that. And, you know, found a way in. And it's nice that way. You know, you could do that in Savannah.
Well, as long as we're doing that, I know you're in the Book Lady.
Yes.
And I know you're in the Irritable Pelican Gallery out on Tybee. Where else?
I'm in the Friendship Coffee Company on Wilmington Island.
Ah, okay.
And I'm on Locally Made Savannah on Broughton Street.
On Broughton.
Right.
Is that the one up in the power plant district?
No.
No.
No, it is... Can I remember the address? I think it is 223 West Broughton.
223 West, okay.
Yeah.
I'm good with addresses. I wouldn't remember any.
Well, Broughton is kind of... Broughton all kind of runs together anyway.
Right. Yeah.
Jose.
Yeah.
You have been creating and marketing and selling art in Savannah for quite a while now.
Mm-hmm.
If there was somebody starting out, what tips would you have for them, if any?
Well, I like what Mark just said about focusing on your physical community, you know, your local community first. And, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of people that would say otherwise, considering all the digital, expansive, worldwide markets that we have now. But that's just, it gets dizzying very quick once you start to go into that realm, and you feel like you're always chasing this carrot that's just, you know, getting further and further out there. But when you get involved with the community, I mean, you're grounded in what you're doing. It's all tangible. You're getting real responses. You're getting real... connections, and I think we desperately need that, all of us, no matter where you're at, like, you know, start in your local community and just get a feel for that, and a lot can blossom from that, and you're mixing things together that aren't being forced down your throat by some algorithm or some corporation. You're talking with people, and when creatives get together and start talking, magic happens. But when you're being pushed down little avenues or hallways on the digital sphere, then it's all kind of pre-programmed for you, and you're not getting the magic. You may feel like you may be being told you're getting that, but it's the same thing everyone else is getting in some way, shape, or form. But when you actually get out there, you're gonna meet a haiku artist, and you're going to meet a sculptor, and you're going to meet someone who sits on the park bench and feeds squirrels and, you know, and understands, like, you know, sees things. Like, everyone's, you know, if we all take a moment and just pay attention, there's a lot to be discovered. But it's gonna happen in this really neat and beautiful way. I chased a lot of that stuff for a while, and it was literally killing me. So I had to just step back and be like, what makes me happy? I don't need that. And, you know, I have enough right here with this thing. And I have been fortunate to be making a living as a creator for a long time. So I'm going to knock on wood here and say
absolutely
keep it going. And now at this point, I'm like, what's my most ideal version of this look like? So that's kind of what I'm trying to take time and acknowledge. And yeah,
back I've forgotten whether it was the Bronze Age or the Iron Age, when Mark and I were teenagers, there was a fellow by the name of Marshall McLuhan who said that the medium is the message. And I think we're finally coming to realize that we don't necessarily want the medium to be the message. There is something to be said for local things. There is something to be said for personal things. There are things that don't size out to everybody that are still precious and important to have. And I think that's perhaps another way of saying what you just said more eloquently.
Yeah. You know, I like the open mics. And I like talking to people about poetry. I like reading my poetry to people and hearing how they react, because I like it face to face. I think we're much better off as fancy apes being face to face with each other instead of being screens to each other.
There are actually a whole lot of studies that say that when you are not face to face, when you're a screen or from actually being a hologram or a screen all the way down to reading a book, every step away removes some point of contact. So face to face is still the way to go if you want to communicate with somebody directly. Well, anyway, it has been fabulous having both of you here. Mark, I wish you all the best of luck with Wetlands. I have a copy, and I think highly of it. I think other people should investigate it. And, of course, Jose is, as I said, a noted artist in the Savannah area. Both for his rather larger things, and he's done some pretty neat small things too. If you look on the net, you should probably, for Mark, look at ruminatingpoet.com.
Ruminatingpoetpress.com.
Press.com. Right. And there's a joserake.com too, I believe.
That's correct.
And
yes.
So that's. That's really neat. I would urge you to, if you're interested in this sort of thing at all, I'd urge you to check that out. It's been lovely having both of you. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. It's fun talking to you, Ed, as usual.
Take care.